It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to the Elise Glink Show live on Sundays 11 to 1. It is a hot morning, and I hope you're staying cool. 91 degrees on Peachtree Street, and we've just gotten started, so get out a tall glass of water, lemonade. Once it's noon, you can drink something stronger. Sit back and enjoy, because we've got a whole lot of stuff to talk about today. Phone number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. So yesterday I had the distinct pleasure of filling in for my good friend Mark Arum, who's taken a couple of days off for the holiday. I'll be filling in for Clark, by the way, on Wednesday, July 4th. And on the show, we had some people call in who had been trying to do a refinance, and somebody said that, you know, they just, you know, felt like they'd gotten overcharged, but they'd only called their own lender. And I said, how could you just call your own lender? I mean, you really have to go out there and shop around. And they're like, well, I didn't know I could shop around. I listen to you and Clark all the time, but I didn't know I could shop around. But, you know, what do we say on the show? What do I say on the show all the time? I have this mantra, right? The mantra for refinancing goes like this. I know you've heard it. Number one, can you lower the interest rate? Number two, can you lower your monthly payment? Number three, can you shorten the loan term? Because that's where the big savings comes in. And number four, what are the costs of refinance? Can you manage those refinance costs? And the way you do that is shopping around. If you can get all four of those things to line up, you have hit a massive home run with your refinance. Right, we say it all the time. So I was asking people to tweet or go on my Twitter account, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, because as I tell you every week, I'm very active on Twitter during the show. I have now perfected the fine art of tweeting and talking at the same time. So while we're talking, I'm tweeting web addresses, and I'm tweeting phone numbers that you can call, like, you know, for HARP and all the other things. And so we started this conversation online yesterday, late afternoon, filling in for Mark Arum, about people who don't shop around, and then they get upset because they've paid too much for their refinance. And my feeling is that if you don't shop around, if you don't take care with your own money, you deserve to get what you get. You deserve to get soaked with fees. Now, I'm not suggesting that you deserve to be ripped off, but everybody is out for themselves. You know, this idea that you can trust your mortgage lender, there are so few people that I would trust to make an intelligent decision for me, knowing that they get compensated on the other side. And maybe the problem is you don't understand how lenders get compensated. So, you know, let's do that 101, where when you go to a mortgage broker, they get paid by the end lenders, right, to fund the loan. You pay them, they get paid on the other side. It doesn't mean they're neutral. They want as much money as they can get, generally speaking. They're in business to make a profit, right? It's what this country is based on. So the idea that somehow you go to that person and they're doing things that are in your best interest, not necessarily. I mean, you'd like to think that they are. They probably are. If they're good, solid, upstanding people, they are. They're hopefully not like, you know, millions of people get tricked into a worse loan just to make higher fees. You know, you hope that you have searched around and done your homework. But you have to do the homework. You have to do the homework to find a quality person, and then you have to talk to several different kinds of lenders to make sure that you're getting the best deal. Nobody is going to just hand you the best deal. This has never been my experience. And I know it seems like, oh, Elise is the expert, so it just falls over for her. It doesn't happen that way for me. Sam and I spend so much time searching for great deals. Sam would rather do work himself than pay anybody to fix something in our house. I mean, it's only when something does break, like we've had, I was saying on the show yesterday that we have had, like, bad air conditioning karma, you know, in our office, in our home, on the airplane we took last week. Air conditioning was out all over the place. So you have to know who to call. Sam is now, we have a rental property that we're renting as of August 1st, and Sam was moving some stuff out of it and realized that it completely needed to be painted and professionally cleaned, and he's going to get three bids. We practice what we preach. When I tell you to go shop around to different lenders, I do it all the time myself. Because if I don't care about my money, why should anybody else care about my money? So back to Twitter. There's this sort of vigorous conversation that's been going on at Glink, at GLINK, and you can join the conversation and see it if you want, where people are saying, you know, I just don't think people, you know, if they're not careful, they will get taken advantage of. I just don't think they deserve it. And, you know, my feeling is you can use the taxonomy any way you want. You can say somebody deserves, doesn't deserve. My feeling is if you don't care enough about your money to be careful with it, to spend it wisely, to shop around, to make sure you're getting the very best deal that you can get, you get what you get. Right? Who else is going to care about your money except for you? And it's the same whether you're buying a house, whether you're getting a mortgage, whether you're shopping around for a new credit card. You know, who's going to care about your money except for you? I mean, I care about your money, but I'm not there every day managing your wallet for you. Maybe that's a new business. I should go into this business of managing wallets electronically, and then you'll just, you know, hand over your money to me, and I will spend it for you. And, you know, it doesn't work, right? You have to take the responsibility. You have to decide that this is going to be something that you can do with your life. And I do care so passionately about it. That's why I'm here every single Sunday talking to you about how to make these smart decisions. Because decisions cost money, and if you make the wrong one, that's $5,000 that you've blown. I felt so bad for one of our callers yesterday because that was the amount of money he ended up spending on a refinance, like $5,500 or something. And he said, I feel like I got ripped off. And then somebody else called in and said, yeah, I just refinanced to a 15-year and spent $375. The deals are there. You just have to be willing to do the work. That's it. It's not any more complicated than that. So I invite you to join me online at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Join the conversation. We're having a lot of fun. 404-872-0750 is our number at the show. Some lines are wide open. We're going to go to David and Tucker. David, good morning. Happy Sunday. You staying cool?
Oh, yes. I found wimping out and turning on the air conditioning seems to help a little bit.
Wimping out? I didn't think at 91 that was so wimpy, actually, but good for you.
Yeah, I'm pretty comfy at about 91. When it goes above that, it's time to turn on the fans and turn on the AC.
Well, good for you. What's going on in your real estate life today?
Well, I was, now we have the Supreme Court decision come down, and since the election will have no impact on the Senate until next year, my understanding is there are a lot of taxes that are actually going to click in January 1st. And wanted to know a little more detail on that and what do you think it's going to do to the economy. Also, if I heard this right, it sounds like some of these taxes are going to impact particular industries pretty dramatically, particularly maybe like chain restaurants, things like that. Just wanted to get your comments on this.
Well, so there's a couple of different things going on here, which I think are obviously the Supreme Court decision was momentous in so many ways this week. But in terms of real estate, there is a 3.8% Medicare tax that goes into effect, I think it's January 1st. Yeah, January 1st. And that tax, in terms of how that will affect you, is for profits that are over the $250,000 that you get to keep, or $500,000 if you're married on a primary residence. So right now, with everybody's property prices being down in the dumps, it's you really have had to have gotten either very lucky or owned your property for a million years to get that level of profit. But assuming you have that level of profit, and let's say you and your spouse are now at the $500,000 level, and let's say you actually have $600,000 in profit when you sell your property. And we're talking net profit, so it's after the commissions are subtracted and the costs of sale and all that kind of stuff. You would be taxed, and assume it's a long-term capital gain. So you'd be taxed at the long-term capital gain rate, wherever that lands right now, I think it's 20%. And you would be taxed another 3.8% on top of that, for something that's called the Medicare tax. But it's for, it's not just only, it's not just real estate. It's any investment that's over that level, the, you know, over the over and above that certain level. And I believe you also have to have income over $250,000 a year to even be considered part of that category. So that's one set of taxes. But it seems like you're also talking about the fiscal cliff that we're approaching at the end of 2012, which is when all of the Bush-era tax reductions and tax levels expire, and it bounces up. It's also
the payroll tax goes back up.
Yeah, everything. There is a huge fiscal cliff that we're getting to in this country, and you know something has to be done. So on the right, everybody's like, you know, lower taxes, and this is going to expand the economy and all the rest, and yet they want the debt to come down. Okay, well, we've had, you know, you can look at it any way you want, but two unfunded wars are very expensive. So, I mean, leaving aside all the other stuff, there's just a lot going on. On the other side, they're trying, you know, you're saying, well, these were only meant to go until 2012, and now they're going to bounce up. I think that there's a huge fiscal cliff, and I think that the government has to, on both sides, come together and figure out what they're going to do. And I don't think that it's been effective the way it's been handled thus far. That's just my two cents. And
well,
so
everything's been postponed to after the election. I have some hope that the Bush tax cuts and the payroll thing will be rolled back during the lame duck session. But as it is, there will be no way of modifying all the medical related taxes. Those are coming come hell or high water.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we are running at 60 miles an hour when it just comes to health care in this country. We're running into a brick wall, and I've spent my last year and a half building a website called themedicarenewsgroup.com. So in my marketing consulting hat that I wear and content projects that I create, we've created this really amazing site that talks about Medicare, the policy related to Medicare, the practicality of Medicare. It explains what Medicare is. And it's a website that's actually optimized for journalists to help journalists better understand what they're covering. And so in the doing the research of MedicareNewsGroup.com, I've had the privilege of spending time with some CEOs and high-level, C-level executives across healthcare companies in various industries, you know, in this country, and doing a tremendous amount of research. And I've had the chance to talk to CEOs about what's happening at these biggest companies, and they all say the same thing, which is that we are running at 60 miles an hour into a huge wall, and it's unsustainable. It's just unsustainable. So something has to be done. You can't just let healthcare and market forces or whatever we're doing right now, it's just not going to work for the long term. So they know that there is a huge problem. And believe it or not, they don't all hate, as you've seen just from the statements that have come out over the last couple of weeks, where they're like, well, no matter what happens with the Supreme Court, we're going to still keep this, this, and this. So I don't know how this is all going to get resolved, but if we don't start focusing some attention and some of our brightest minds in this country on fixing the healthcare problem and all the requisite things that go into that, whether it's taxes or limitations or fees or reimbursables or the Medicaid money, we don't start addressing all of those in a very, very real way, there will be a healthcare cliff to fall off, not just a fiscal cliff to fall off. David, thank you so much for your call. It's 21 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glenk Show, 404-872-0750. I'm Elyse Glenk. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Anytime at thinkglenk.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
I'm Elyse Glenk. Thanks for joining us this Sunday, 404-872-0750. George joins us on the line from Marietta. Hey, George, how can I help you today?
Hey, Elyse, how are you?
Good. What's going
Good.
On?
I got a refi question for you. Currently, I'm in a 30-year fixed loan. I'm in year 23. I currently owe $80,000. I imagine that I'm probably underwater about $15,000. One, what are my chances of refinancing? Two, you mentioned shopping around. I'm not sure should I shop around on the internet, or
you
what
should,
exactly are you talking about?
Right. So if you're underwater, what's your interest rate, by the way?
6.75.
Right. So if you're underwater, you may qualify. You've had this loan a long time, so you may qualify for a home affordable modification, or better, if you can afford your payments, the home affordable refinance program.
Okay.
Have you started with that yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
I've read a little bit about it, but that's about it.
Okay. So lowering your monthly payments would be great, or just refinancing would be great. So you're looking for HARP. The HARP program.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find information about it at makinghomeaffordable.com. So this is a program for people not behind in their mortgages and who can't get traditional refinancing simply because you're underwater, which it sounds like you are.
Yeah.
Go to makinghomeaffordable.com. You can read the rules about who qualifies and how to go about doing it. I will tweet it online as well. But you will want to shop around for different lenders and tell them that you're looking for a HARP refinance program and then get directed to the absolute right person. You can also call 888-995-HOPE. That's 888-995-4673 and talk to a HUD-certified housing counselor. And let me know what happens. 28 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a short break. Be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Advice anytime at ThinkGlink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
36 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. I'm so glad you could join me on this hot, hot, hot Sunday. If you're driving around to church and back, I sure hope your car has air conditioning that works really well. But whether you are inside or outside in front of your air conditioner or wandering in the garden trying to water your droopy plants, like I was doing this morning, make sure you drink a lot of water, cold water. It's a good thing today. 404-872-0750 is our number. There are some lines open. We're going to go back to the phones in just a moment. Be delighted to chat with you. We're also having this ongoing conversation on Twitter. We're delighted to have you join us at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. There's also a lot going on at the Equifax Finance blog, and we're going to be, we haven't done this yet, but you guys are always the first people to hear when things are happening. There's going to be a very exciting event that we're going to be launching on the Equifax Finance blog, a few weeks from now. So you can sign up for the RSS feed. You can follow us on Twitter. There's all kinds of things you can do on the Equifax Finance blog. Plus, you get all this really amazing information. We have, in wake of the Supreme Court decision, really great tips on health insurance, like tips for filing a health insurance appeal was a new story in June. Other kinds of tips like that in the tax world, insurance, credit, retirement, real estate, and, of course, family money, which is one of our newest and most popular category. So you'll definitely want to go to the Equifax Finance blog, blog.equifax.com, or if you just go to equifax.com, you can click on Finance Blog at the top, and it'll take you there. And I'll tweet out a few of the links a little bit later on in the show so you can see. But there is just a wealth of information there, and I don't want you to miss it. So blog.equifax.com. 404-872-0750 is our number at the station. Let's go back to the phones. Rosalind joins us on the line from Woodstock. Hi, Rosalind.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
You're more than welcome. You staying cool today?
I am, thank you.
All right, good. What's going on?
I have a townhouse that is upside down in its mortgage.
Okay.
I was thinking about doing a short sale.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have been doing some research, and I have a potential neighbor who's interested. And I was trying to figure out, based on that, those two pieces of information, what would my next step conceivably be?
So you're doing it. Tell me why you're doing a short sale.
It is a hardship. I have relocation. My renters moved out, owing 3 months' rent and leaving me a year's water bill. Just a disaster. And
this is an investment property.
Yes.
Got it. So now you're thinking about doing the short sale just to cut your losses and run.
Exactly.
And I think that's a perfectly legitimate thing to do. So The problem with short sales, and how much are you underwater, by the way? Do you have any idea?
It's going to be probably between $40,000 and $50,000.
It's a big chunk of money.
Yes.
So the thing with short sales is that you have to get the approval from the bank for the pricing. And lenders today are getting slightly more reasonable in this, but it depends on the lender. There are new rules in place that requires the lender to respond to you within 30 days and then within 60 days. So what you'll have to do is figure out what other homes you're selling for, call your lender, tell them you want to sell the house as a short sale, and see what they say. What they may say is you have to actually list the property because they want to make sure they're getting the very most that they could be getting for it. So even though you have a neighbor who wants to buy it, you may actually have to list the property so that you can prove to them that there's nobody else who's willing to pay more. Or you may have to go to them with other comps of what homes you're selling for. So the first thing to do is figure out what your lender's process is. So you should pick up the phone, call them, say that you want to sell your house short sale, and you want to talk to somebody there.
Okay.
Now, I have to warn you that there are going to be extremely significant tax implications for doing this. All right?
Oh, okay.
So get ready. This is not going to be fun for you. Because this is an investment property, you do not get an exemption from phantom income rules from the IRS. That means if you are, let's say, there's a deficiency of $50,000. So the lender now accepts the offer, and there's a $50,000 deficiency. They report that to the IRS, and it looks like income to you. So you're going to owe the IRS tax at your marginal income rate, marginal tax rate, whatever that is. So if you earn $50,000 a year, now it's going to look like, to the IRS, like you've earned $100,000 for next year. Do you understand?
I do. Mm-hmm.
So that you have to prepare to pay the IRS maybe $15,000 to $20,000, and there may be some state taxes to pay as well. So you're not going to get out of this scot-free. I mean, not that you thought you were, but you have to be prepared for this. This is going to be significant.
So is it best to get a realtor who specializes in short sales? Will that be a benefit, or does that not make a difference?
It could be a benefit. If the lender tells you that you have to list the property, then you have to go find somebody who specializes in short sales.
I have somebody already identified.
Okay, perfect. But if you can do it without having to pay a commission, that would be better. Because the commission just adds to the deficiency.
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you can not do that, right, because maybe the realtor will take $5,000 or $7,000. I don't know how much the property is. What's the property priced at?
Well, the townhouse right next door just short sold for $110,000 this month.
Okay. So there might be $5,000 or $6,000 in commission that has to be paid. So that just adds to your deficiency.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So you really, it's serious stuff. So you want to be very clear on whether you can do this with the lender directly yourself, whether you're going to need to hire somebody, and all the different steps. And I would talk to your accountant or tax preparer so you fully understand the implications on your taxes. Because the last thing I want is for you to come to April 15th and be shell-shocked because you're like, where did this bill for $20,000 come from? Because you're going to have to think about now how you're going to pay that next year.
Oh, my. So, you know, I guess I have to really weigh the fact of doing short sale or just coming up with the money to pay the difference at closing.
Correct.
The implications are different. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
And if you have that cash, I could see the lender going after it. So maybe they will and maybe they won't, but you want to be very clear that you understand the implications of what's happening here. Plus, if you do the short sale, you'll, you know, damage your credit pretty significantly for a while.
Right.
So it's a big decision. It's almost like a big what do I want to say? The big chart you want to put out there, right? Because you want to make sure you understand the tax column, the cash column, you know, the credit column, and what are the different possibilities as you go down the line. The
are
other
any
thing I would
resources online that could help educate me, because it seems like a lot of education needs to take place before.
I have a lot of information on thinklink.com. You can also go to there are just a number of websites that help people, you know, think about what's going on with this. You'll probably want to take a look at your lender's website. If it's one of the big lenders, they all have information up there about short sales and foreclosures and the process they go through. We have great information on the Equifax Finance blog. So the information opportunities are out there. You just have to, if you just go online and start reading, there will be, you know, an unlimited number of places to go. But Rosalind, you just have to be prepared, because there are all kinds of twists and turns. Like, for example, real estate attorneys are not usually used to do house deals in Georgia. I'm telling you, if you're doing a short sale and you're negotiating with your lender, you absolutely have to have a real estate attorney, because there are so many potholes along the way, and this could come back to bite you, and you don't want it to. So you can also start with a real estate attorney, and you can find one at the Georgia Bar Association or the Atlanta Bar Association, and they'll refer you to the head of the real estate committee, and you can start there to get some names of people to call. But it's a big thing that you're going to do, and I want you to be really understand what it's going to take to get it done the right way, so that you're fully protected as you move forward. 404-872-0750. It's 46 minutes past the hour. Ralph joins us on the line from Covington. Hi, Ralph.
Hey, Lee. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's going on?
So, I'm going to give you a little background. I'm a mortgage right now with one of the big banks. I'm underwater. I'm $70,000 in the hole. My credit's ruined right now. We've gone behind our mortgage, and the lender in late March came to us for help. And I was under the impression I was going to be part of that principal reduction program, you know, they're offering, you know, they're starting to offer. And then 3 months later, after sending paperwork, you know, stubs, you know, you name it, tax returns and all that, the bank approved my modification. But I was under the impression, again, I was going to get the principal reduction. But instead of that, I got my interest rate dropped to 1%, and the payments we were behind, they just added that to the end of the loan. So that's not going to help me really, because we're struggling paying the mortgage as it is. And to add fuel to the fire, you know, it's just my wife got laid off.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
So, you know, when the bank told me, you know, the good news, I was approved and everything, and then I was told what are the terms, you know, so we have to wait a couple of days because it was just at the end of the month, you know, they're closing their papers and closing their books, you know, so call back in a couple of days, and I did call Friday, and they told me, well, this is the terms of the modification. They told me the 1% reduction and all that, and so my payment just dropped $60 a month. I said, $60 a month, that's not going to help me. And so I asked them, I said, what about, I thought I was under the principal reduction program. I said, no, you're not under that. So how do I go about getting the bank to put me in that program, because I don't want to move. I don't want to, you know, let the house go. If you short sell the house, I mean, basically it's the same thing as if they agree up on, you know, selling the house for $50,000, I don't know, $40,000.
But, Ralph, let me stop you. Take a breath for a moment.
Yeah.
You are underwater dramatically. Your
yes.
wife just lost her job. You're
yes.
already behind on your payments.
Yes.
You have to face the idea that you may not be able to stay in this house.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that.
I know you don't want to leave, but if you can't afford to pay anything, they're not just going to say, if you were both out of a job, maybe they would put your payments on hold for 3 or 6 months altogether. You wouldn't know anything while you try to get back on your feet.
Right.
But you still have a job, right?
Yeah, I'm still fully employed, yes.
And so now you don't qualify for that. There are certain limitations to these programs. They're never as good as you think they're going to be.
Oh, okay.
And even though you thought you were applying for a principal reduction program, I don't know what led you to think that you were actually going to get that.
Yeah, that was sort of the impression. So.
Did they say to you, oh, you'd qualify for a principal reduction?
Well, that's what they told me, but apparently I misunderstood them, and that's what it is. I appreciate them, you know, catching up with our payments and reducing the interest, but
60, and I agree with you, $60 just, it doesn't get you as far as it used to back in 1922.
No, no.
Right?
Exactly.
But the reality is, the best thing that may be able to happen for you is moving on. Is realizing that this house is not going to work out for you.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And then you have to figure out what your plan B is. Because I want you to have your plan B in place.
Right.
So that you know where you're going and you can get yourself packed up and moved. Do you have kids?
No, they're grown, so I mean, they're on their own now, so we're in good shape when it comes to that.
Okay, so you don't have to worry about school and school districts and all that kind of stuff. You and your wife can just say, this is what we can afford now. We need to rebuild our life. Our credit is ruined.
Yes.
We need to start over.
That's what I was thinking. And so will it be best to talk to the bank and try to ask the bank for a short sale, or should I just let it go?
You can, either way. It doesn't really matter. I mean, you can try to do a short sale. The question is, will the bank actually even approve a short sale? And what will that do for you if they do approve it? So you have to decide, you know, this is the year, if you're going to let this go and you're so far underwater, this is the year to give the house back to the bank and say, look, take it. Forgive the debt. I want it in writing that this debt is forgiven, that you're never going to come after me for it. That's crucial. That's why you need an attorney to help you with this. Hand the house back to the bank, jingle mail with the keys, and you and your wife go on, draw a line in the sand, and start moving forward. Not only that, the bank may actually hand you a check to help you move, because the big banks are all doing that. So start thinking about this as a way to draw a line in the sand and begin your financial life all over again, and to start the rebuilding process, because you're in a situation, I don't think it's going to end well for you. You're never going to get the kind of relief on your mortgage that you've been hearing other people get. It's not going to happen. You've got to take a different tactic for you. And if you do, and if you move forward on this path, a year from now, you're going to be very, very happy. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Klink. Be right back on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody. So next hour, we're going to talk about foreclosures and pending home sales. There are some new numbers out this week that indicate, and some people have been trumpeting, that the housing crisis is over and things are better. Interesting, there are some glimmers of hope, which is amazing this far into the spring, and I think we officially have to say we're in summer, but I'm very cautious before proclaiming we're over it and no problem and, hey, no need to worry, just get out there. But there are some glimmers of good news. So we'll talk about foreclosures, pending home sales, and answer more of your questions about refinancing, appraisals, HARP. We've got some questions about whether HARP will work for rental properties. We'll have all of those answers and more coming up next. 404-872-0750. I think we have a prize pack to give away. It's going to be a packed hour. Stay tuned to News Talk WSB.
It's the rich man's world.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. I'm live on Sunday mornings here on News Talk WSB. Our phone number is 404-872-0750. And my website is thinkglink.com, T-H-I-N-K-G-L-I-N-K.com. If you're not signed up for our free weekly newsletter, you should be, because there's really cool stuff going on there. And then also follow me on Twitter, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. We've been tweeting all morning, websites and phone numbers for the HARP program, Home Affordable Refinance, loan mods, other kind of information I've found along the way, things that I absolutely think you'll be interested in. All of that comes to you directly from Twitter. I found it is the most effective, quick way of getting you in touch with the information you need. So follow me online at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, and join the conversation. So every month, a company called CoreLogic reports the numbers of foreclosures, completed foreclosures in the country. And the number for May, which is the most recent numbers that are just out, May of 2012, there were 63,000 completed foreclosures in the month. That's a good number. That's a really high number, but that's a good number because it was 77,000 in May of 2011, so a year ago. And it is slightly worse than the number from April of 2012, where it was 62,000. The report also keeps a running tally of how many foreclosures there have been since 2008. And this number is shocking, shocking to me. 3.6 million homes have been lost to foreclosure since September of 2008. Think of all those families and their children and their siblings or their parents who were staying with them, and think about how that just kind of cascades through communities and through families and the destruction that that has brought. At 3.6 million. It's huge. It's 1% of this country. Right now, about 1.4 million homes are currently in the national foreclosure inventory. That is the share of all mortgaged homes at some stage of the foreclosure process. It is down slightly from a year ago. It is the same as it was in April of 2012. You're looking at about 2,400 completed foreclosures every day over the last 12 months. Every day in this country, 2,400 people lose their homes. They hand back the keys and they walk away and it's all done. Now, how does this make for good news? And the answer is it does and it doesn't, right? There is such a backlog of foreclosed homes. And stimulating demand for those homes has been very, very difficult. There are people who are trying to buy huge tracts of foreclosed homes in places like Nevada and in Arizona and Michigan. And in those three states, there has been a 20% decline in foreclosure activity from a year ago. But it's rising in Hawaii, New York, and Connecticut. The states with the highest number of foreclosures in May, California, Florida, Michigan, Texas, Georgia. Georgia had 57,000 completed foreclosures last year in the past 12 months. And that accounted, those five states accounted for almost 50% of all foreclosures nationally. Now, where do you want to go if there are no foreclosures or very few foreclosures? South Dakota, District of Columbia, North Dakota, West Virginia, Hawaii. It's just how it goes. But what does it say about where we are that there are just so many homes and so many people falling into foreclosure? And we've already had calls today. One of our callers said his wife just lost her job. I have advised them to look into going into foreclosure. I don't think there's going to be a principal reduction for them. We're not done yet. So I am thrilled that I had a call yesterday as I was filling in for Mark Arum from a realtor who said that in her communities, in certain price ranges, there are just not enough homes and they're now seeing multiple offers and then the property prices are going up. That sounds good. The problem, as we heard from Rosalind, is that the townhouse next to her just sold for $110,000, and she's $50,000 underwater. So you can have a bidding war and not enough, you know, then the appraisals go out and there are not enough home sales at the new higher level to justify that price, and then those sales fall apart. That's why we're seeing pending home sales trend higher, but the actual completed sales aren't really going anywhere. There is a significant number of homes that are just not selling at a price point that could be supported or proven at the right level to a bank. And banks have gotten very, very tough about proving value. And you could say and make the argument, well, if three people want to pay $175,000 for that house, it must be worth it. That's what a market economy is. And I'm here to tell you that that's what we got into the trouble back in 2002, 2003, 2004, and 2005, because that's what lenders did. They said, oh, well, three people bidding on it, and appraisers, you know, said, oh, well, I guess that's what the market value is, and it just kind of get built up, and that is what a bubble feels like. So you can say we're under the level now, so we have to get back up to it, but it's going to be a slow process. It's not going to happen overnight. And anybody who thinks it is and does and is trying to tell you that it is does not truly understand how real estate works. Falls fast, builds slowly every time. 404-872-0750. It is 14 minutes past the hour. Let's go to the phones. Amy joins us on the line. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Elise. My question, we bought our house 3 years ago, and we've got a 30-year mortgage. And when the appraisal came in, it came in at 580. We refinanced a few months ago to a 15-year. And when the appraisal came in, it was $480, $100,000 less.
I'm sorry.
So, you know, our closing cost us $400 total, so not bad there. And so when I questioned the mortgage company about it, because, you know, we have two garages, one detached and one attached, and the detached garage wasn't on and things like that. And so it's a unique property. But my question was, or he said, well, you know, it really doesn't impact your loan because, you know, number one, you're not paying for it, and, you know, it's not a cheap, it's not an issue because of the amount of equity you have in it, blah, blah, blah. So my question is, and he also said it was a government inspector. So two questions.
It was a government what? I'm sorry, it was a government
inspector.
Uh-huh.
So my question is do we have government inspectors on houses like we do lunches? And you
know, not that I've known of. You were over the limit for getting a government loan, so I don't think you got an FHA loan, and not at $480,000.
Well, we only financed $250,000.
Okay.
So I don't know if that makes
did you
a difference
get why would you get an FHA loan? I'm sure you didn't.
But even so,
I don't know what he means by a government inspector.
Okay.
I don't know what that means, but I agree with most of what he's telling you. So I joke with my husband, Sam, that we're no longer allowed to refinance our loan because every time we do, the appraised value of our house comes in another $100,000 less.
Yeah.
It means nothing. I have 75% equity in my home, but it's annoying and, you know, debilitating emotionally to see that my house is still falling in value, but it's meaningless.
Okay.
You have to divorce yourself from what a number on the paper says to you about your house. You refinanced for $400. You got a 15-year loan. I'm guessing it's somewhere in the 3% range?
Yes, 3.75.
Awesome. Unless you are prepared to go to a 10-year loan at 2.875 or 3%, you should be totally happy with this. Let it go, and just continue focusing on living your life and being so excited that you're paying very, very little for your money.
Okay.
The true level of what value is meaningless unless you're going to sell your house. It's a little bit like stocks that way. I hesitate to always to make this comparison because people get nervous, but if you buy a share of stock and the stock goes up 20% one day and down 15%, and then it goes up 16%, and then it goes down 50%, and none of it matters, right? You just feel better or worse, but it doesn't matter till it comes time to sell. Then it matters what day, where the price is of the stock on the day you're going to sell. Same thing with a house.
All right, then.
You gotta let it. You gotta let it go.
Let it go. Okay.
Go enjoy the heat.
Bye.
Thanks for your call. 17 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Mitchell joins us on the line from Cumming. Hi, Mitchell. Mitchell, you with us? I don't think so. 17 minutes past the hour, let's try Albert. Albert, you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, what's going on?
I had a question about selling a house that is actually less than the purchase price, but at or near the current equity value in the house.
Okay.
In that case, does the seller actually get a tax break in terms of a capital gains loss?
Unfortunately, is this a house you live in or a house you're investing in?
Well, I'm looking for houses to invest in, so I'm just trying to see if that's an incentive for someone to look for someone to actually purchase their house.
Well, okay, so let's back up to the 30,000-foot level. Investing in property is very different from buying a house to live in, right?
Yes.
When you buy a personal residence and you sell it and you lose money, too bad. You don't get anything. There's no tax break for that. But if you have an investment property... and you sell that investment property for less than you pay for it, then there could be a break depending on how you do your taxes down the line.
Again, what I'm suggesting is that someone that has a house, for example, that initially had a price of say, $250,000, and they put $50,000 down, but they wound up with an interest rate. And because of circumstances recently, that mortgage payment is hurting. And so maybe they want to be able to get out of that house and to get into something smaller, less expensive, more affordable. If someone comes by and offers them a price that's equal to the equity that they have in the house, now we're talking about the person being that's their private residence. It's not
a
rental property or something like that. And so if they sell it then for the $200,000 to get out from under it, they basically have had a $50,000 loss.
Correct. And I'm telling you they don't get a tax break for that.
They don't?
No.
Okay, I'm surprised. Because if they bought the house for $250,000 and sold it for $300,000, they certainly would have to pay a $50,000 capital gains on it.
No, they wouldn't.
No?
No.
Oh.
Let me educate you.
Straighten me out.
Okay. So the rules are that if you have a primary residence and you've lived there for at least 2 years, 24 months, and you sell it, you get to keep the first $250,000 if you're single in profits tax-free. If you're married, you get to keep the first $500,000 in profits tax-free.
Okay, I didn't realize that.
Yep, that's been in place for, at least, 12 years.
Okay.
Maybe longer. So
how does that work in reverse where you don't get the capital gains loss or the capital loss?
You don't get a loss. You just lose the money. There is no tax benefit if you lose on a primary residence.
Okay, I'm surprised at that also.
Okay. Well, the let me tell you where to go to read up on it. You can go to the IRS.gov website, and what you're looking for is IRS publication, I think it's 523, Selling Your Home,
mm-hmm.
and it will run down the rules for you.
All right, I'll go check that out.
All right.
Yeah. You know, the other interesting thing is, with these days and times, with everyone having problems with making their mortgage payments and the price of housing going down significantly, why aren't the prices for cars and TVs and food and gas bills and insurance, why aren't they dropping proportionally?
It's a great question, Albert. I think that we did see sales go down dramatically of new cars, and we did see prices drop a little bit, But houses are a special case. That's why we talk about real estate every single week on the show. I'm Elise Klink. Stay tuned. We have a prize pack coming up. I'll be right back to move that on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
27 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks so much for joining us today. Prize pack to give away, and it's awesome. It includes a pair of tickets to see Crosby, Stills, and Nash in concert July 14th, the day after my birthday, Verizon Wireless Amphitheater, produced by ASO Presents. I actually saw them this past December. They were amazing. I was just amazed how they can still do harmonies. A pair of tickets to see Titanic, the Artifact Exhibition, and a pair of tickets to see Bodies, the exhibition, now at Atlantic Station. Prize value, $198. We're going to give it away to the fifth caller. The phone line, 404-741-0750. Be nice to Fred. He's the one taking your call. All right, 28 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a short break for news, weather, and traffic. It is really hot out there, folks. Take a sip of water. I just went and got some iced coffee. Hang out with us a little longer, and we're going to get to more of your questions next. I'll be tweeting during the break on News Talk WSB.
Packed my bags last night.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
36 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. Hey, you know, I'm going to be sitting in for Clark on Wednesday, which is very exciting. And I hope you'll be able to join us for that as well. And I think I've got another fill-in date coming up maybe next weekend as well. So lots of extra time to talk about real estate and money. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter. We've had a whole bunch of people do that today, and we are having just a robust conversation about it. So at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Totally delighted to have you join us. In fact, I just put out that I had gotten some iced coffee during the break and wondering what you're drinking to stay cool, and somebody just tweeted me Coca-Cola, but of course it's Atlanta. 404-872-0750. Tim from Swanee was the winner of our prize pack. Congratulations. Enjoy that Crosby, Stills, and Nash concert. I always, always love hearing them. All right, let's go back to the phones. Bill joins us on the line from Woodstock. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Elise, it's Bill Holcomb.
Very nice to have you on the air.
My daughter, Lindsay, purchased a condo in Stuart, Florida for $185,000 in May of 2010, and she and her husband lived in it until they were transferred to Birmingham about less than a year ago. The Homeowners Association allowed them to rent the condo. They were unable to sell it at the time. They purchased it for $185,000, and now the Homeowners Association is trying to reduce the number of units that can be rented. Do they have any recourse? The board seems to be somewhat dysfunctional. There are only three members on it, and one of them just quit due to harassment by owners, and we just wondered what kind
of... Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine that poor man's life? I'm sure he quit from harassment from owners. I mean, think about it. Everybody's unhappy. You know, the problem that these condo and townhouse homeowners associations are having, Bill, just so you understand, their problem is that nobody can get financing if too many units are rented.
That's correct.
So you can't get people to buy if they can't get loans, and so they're going to have to draw the line at some places, and it sounds like your daughter's getting caught. Now, oftentimes they'll grandfather in for a certain number of years to give you some flexibility, but if she was last one in, she could be first one out.
Yeah, I think they presently allow like 10 to 20% of the units to be rented, and I think they're trying to cut it down to about 10%.
Right.
But the fact that they were allowed to rent it, and now they're changing that, they're threatening on the next renewal in September they won't allow her to keep renting it.
Okay, and they have every right to do that, I'm sure.
Is there much recourse that she might have other than trying to get new members elected to the Homeowners Association?
Well, she can try that. She could also sell her unit.
Yeah, she will try to sell it again. That's one that they will certainly try to do that. They owe about 174, and one unit sold recently for 167, so they're not too far underwater on it.
So great. So she should try and sell it. She should get enough money together to just pay off the difference, and she should move on. I mean, she's not living there anyway. So
correct. They had tried to sell it when about a year ago, and the market was so bad they were unable to, and that's the fear she has.
Yeah, well, the market is now a little better in some places, but not better in others, and she might get lucky if it looks good and it's been well taken care of, and if the the subdivision is good, and, you know, she might get lucky. Hopefully it is. I mean, just in general, Bill, if she had any idea that she was going to be transferred in 2 years, you know she should have never bought it.
Oh, that's correct. She didn't know at the time. Right.
Yeah. I mean, you really have to have a sort of a long-term vision of 5 to 10 years to stay in a house these days, because it's just so hard to make this move. And she's obviously, you know, it's in a tough position. But she, you know, the condo divisions, the condo boards have every single right, homeowners associations, to make changes that are in the benefit of the whole community, even if it hurts individual residents.
Right. But I guess there's no since they allowed her to do it, and they're changing that provision now.
They can change it. They can change it. She's out of luck.
I thought maybe she should see a lawyer, but I don't know if that would pan out at all.
Well, I'm not a lawyer, and I'm not an expert in Florida homeowner association law. But in general, homeowner associations can make changes, and if they say, well, by reducing the amount of rentals that we have, we'll be able to sell our house, get these things sold and off the market, and property values are going to go up, it's pretty hard to fight that.
Okay.
So now she has to think about trying to sell, and I wouldn't wait until September. I would talk to the, you know, the tenant and say, look, we got to get this thing sold. We'd like to get it sold, start selling it. Would you be willing to let our real estate agent come through now and again if she has some interest in it? And I would start looking for the right realtor now, and I would start preparing the website and figuring out what you need to do to get it in shape to sell and get it sold.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it, Elise. I was just wondering if there might be other avenues. They're great financially, able to make the payments now with the rental income and everything. So it's just a matter of they need to sell it. They know that. So it looks like that's their first priority is to sell it.
Yeah, I mean, if she wants to go sit on the board, and usually they don't have absentee owners sitting on the board, but if she wants to go sit on the board and go to the meetings every month, and she wants to participate, but she lives far away now.
Right.
So that's just not practical. So you have to say, well, you know, I can try and fight this and spend $20,000 on a lawyer to get them to change their minds, which they probably won't do, because the reason they're doing this is so people can qualify to buy in the subdivision, which is actually good for me.
Right.
Or she can just live with it.
Okay.
I think living with it is the right move here.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Elise.
You're very welcome, Bill. I hope it works out for your daughter. 42 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750 is our number. Bob joins us on the line from Dunwoody. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Elise. How are you?
Good. What's going on?
Well, I thought I need to call you. I'm trying to refinance from a 30-year to a 15-year fix.
I love that move.
Well, here's my problem. I, like everybody else, my value has dropped, plummeted, I guess I should say.
That's a hard word to say. I'm sorry.
I had equity in my house up until not long ago. So I last refinanced in June of 2010. I'm now below, you know, the 80% loan-to-value ratio. And in order to refinance, I'm being told that because I refinanced in June 2010, I can't take advantage of HARP, and I have to show up at closing and make up the difference between that loss in equity to make the 80% loan to value. So they said anybody who's refinanced after May of 2009 is kind of out of luck.
Yeah, you're out of luck. You can't do it. You there is a cutoff.
Yeah.
This is called a cash in refinance, and that's what you would have to do it, and it probably wouldn't make sense if you can't get to that 80% level simply because you will have to pay private mortgage insurance, and that'll eat up any of the value of the savings.
Right. It sounds like the only way to do this is to show up with the thousands of dollars that they want to make that 80%.
Right, but there's another way. So what's the interest rate that you're at now?
It's not bad. It's at 4.75.
Okay. You know, 4.75 up until about, I don't know, a year ago was considered like an unbelievable interest rate.
Right.
So if you want to make your 30-year loan into a 15-year loan and you don't want to refinance or you can't, just start double paying or put in an extra 2 to 3 payments a year, and you'll probably bring it down from a 30-year to a 21-year loan.
Okay.
So you can just adjust what you're paying and at that amazing rate. And by the way, the difference between 4.75 and, let's say, 3.75, or, you know, which you might get, is not that great. So the interest savings, you know, when you get lower and lower, it's, you know, it's not as significant. So you could start doubling up on payments if you have the extra cash, and you can just bring it down directly. And before you know it, you'll actually be at a place where you'll be able to refinance, probably by the beginning of next year. And interest rates are not going up so anytime soon.
Okay.
So what you can do is just take this next year, take the next 6 months, next year, and you can prepay your mortgage at the 4.75%, and then if you still want to refinance down to a 15-year, you'll be able to do that.
I see. In other words, instead of putting out all that cash now to get the lower rate, go ahead and pay down the mortgage, get it down to the 80%, and then refinance because the rates will still be low.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Will they be this low? No, but I think you'll still, in another 6 months, I think you'll be able to get a 15-year loan in the 3% range.
That sounds great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Bob. Thanks for calling the show. 46 minutes past the hour on News Talk WSB. Will joins us on the line from Mableton. Hi, Will.
Hi,
Will, can you hear me? You sound like you're underwater.
How are you?
I'm doing okay. What's going on?
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I have a home in Greenwich that I'm getting a pretty good interest rate of 4.25, and I wasn't able to take advantage of the HOP program, but I checked into the HAMP program to see if I can be qualified for it due to the fact that I'm having problems financing it. And they turned me down on this, and I wanted to get your insight on this, what I can do, and if there is a place that I can report them to my bank. I can report them to see if I can, if they can.
Okay, Will, I'm going to stop you right here. I'm having a really hard time understanding you. So your interest rate is 4.25%, and you cannot make that loan? You can't make the payment?
I'm having some trouble making the payment right now, yes.
Okay. So if you want to look into a loan modification, you need to go to makinghomeaffordable.gov, and you need to call 888-995-HOPE, HOPE. It's the Homeowner Hope for Hotline, Homeowners Hope Hotline. 888-995-HOPE, and talk to a HUD-certified housing counselor to figure out whether you qualify for HAMP refinance. You know, there are some very specific rules about HAMP refinances. There are some principal reduction, but it's very hard to qualify. And so you're going to have to go and work out whether or not you qualify. And there are all kinds of things that disqualify you. But going to makinghomeaffordable.gov is going to be the first place for you to start. 48 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. Mitchell, you're on the air. Welcome to the Elise Glink Show.
Thanks, Elise, for taking my call.
Cool. Sure. What's on your mind?
I'm a 50-year-old man who's been happily married since 2008, and my house is totally paid for. I paid that off in 2004, and I'm having the hardest time of borrowing money at all, any bank. I've gone to credit unions. I just can't get someone to loan money.
What do you need money for?
Well, I want to want 25 to 50 grand to do just some upkeeps on the house.
So you're looking for a home equity line of credit or a home equity loan?
Right. I've tried HELOC.
Okay. And why do they tell you that they won't lend you the money?
Well, the reason, because my credit was so horrible from almost, I guess, 10, 11 years ago.
Okay. Well, after 10 or 11 years, your credit shouldn't be that horrible if you've paid everything on time and if you've been careful about what you've done. And it sounds to me like maybe you haven't been so careful with your credit. So you need to start by figuring out what is still on your credit report that can help you. And if you're applying all over town and getting turned down, that alone is going to sink it. So start with annualcreditreport.com. Pull a copy of your free credit history. You can pay for a copy of your credit score, if you want, from Equifax. It's about $9. And try to figure out what's going on. Because after 11 years, if you've had clean credit since then, you should have no trouble getting a home equity loan or line of credit. But if you're not, it tells me you still have a problem that you haven't fixed. And until you actively go out there and fix the problems that are on your credit history, maybe there are mistakes that are being reported, maybe somebody has stolen your identity and is charging up a storm and not paying those bills, until you understand what's wrong, you can't start to fix it and turn things around. So annualcreditreport.com, that's where you need to start. 51 minutes past the hour, I'm Elise Glink. Don't forget to pick up today's Atlanta Journal-Constitution. There's all kinds of in-depth reporting on the health care Supreme Court decision, the ACA decision by the Supreme Court that upheld President Obama's plan. You can read all about it in today's Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I'm Elise Glink. We'll be right back with more News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
57 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Flynn. Thanks so much for joining me today. Sandy joins me on now from Stone Mountain. Sandy?
Yes.
We just have a minute. How can I help you?
Thanks so much for taking my call. I'm going to be appealing my taxes for 2011. They bumped up my current value to $161,000, and last year it was $103,000.
Yep.
So that means it went up to approximately 55%.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're saying the value is. And I know for a fact it's gone down in price because of all the homes selling in the area.
So let me give you a quick tutorial on how to appeal taxes. You have a very limited window when you can appeal your taxes. And what you'll want to do is do a market, you'll appeal them based on market conditions. And you'll go with some sales figures, which hopefully your friendly real estate agent will give you, or you can actually find that out yourself. And you're going to go in and make a presentation to the tax assessor that there is no way the property value went up, and in fact it went down. And so you'll make the you'll show homes that are in a similar tax classification as yours with all of the funds, the amount that they've sold for, and they will probably agree with you. But what may not change is the cap rate. There's a percentage that they charge you with the taxes. So even if your value goes down, that may stay the same. So there'll be some benefit. I just don't know how much. 58 minutes past the hour. Thanks so much for joining me today. I'm filling in for Clark on Wednesday, July 4th. So join me for a special Elise Glink show. Clark will be out in the heat, running in the race, and I will be in the cool studio with great information on how you can save more, spend less, and avoid getting ripped off. Thanks so much for joining me today. Have a great, cool Sunday.